Hello and welcome to another episode of Drunk Wiki. We're on episode 6 now, and today I've hit a random article called Classical Guitar Making. So, nice change up from last week's Brexit chat, that is for fucking sure. So, nice little article here on Wikipedia, we're going to jump straight in. Anyone who's a musical enthusiast is going to fucking love this shit. So, let's fucking get in, shall we? Right, now. A person who is specialised in making of stringed instruments such as guitars, lutes, and violins is called a luthier. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but gives a fuck. So, skills. In general, one can distinguish three main aspects of guitar making. Number one, sound. Feature that includes shaping the wood, vibrational aspects, densities, stiffness, wood selection, shaping the bracing, to design, etc. The goal aim here is a sound quality that helps the musician create music. Guitars by different builders often reflect different sound preferences. For example, when comparing instruments of Lacotte or Grobertz with Torres, etc., all can have high sound quality, yet many guitarists feel one may be more appropriate for particular repertoire choices. For example, Lacotte or Grobler, fuck it, that's a name, apparently, for classical era repertoire or Central European Romantic repertoire, versus Torres for Spanish or Latin Romantic Nationalist repertoire, etc. Now you're looking at the playability aspects. Number two, this includes the shaping of the frets, string spacing, neck width, neck, nut and bridge height, and some other shit. The aim is a guitar that is easy, comfortable to play, does not have string buzz, and suits the requirements, desires of a particular player. Number three, the visual decorative aspects. This includes the visual features, blah blah blah. Basically, you don't want your guitar to look like fucking shite. You want it to look nice, you want to hold it and feel comfortable, and when you play it, you want other people to look and go, damn, that's a nice guitar. You know, I mean, for instance, here's a great example, Tom Morello, right? A fantastic guitarist. You know, guitars look like shit. Some of the guitars he comes out on stage, they look like shit. They do. But ultimately, no one gives a fuck because he's fucking genius. Anyway, shaping of wood with acoustics and resonance aims. So this shaping of the wood is known as resonance plate tuning. It refers to a comprehensive tuning of the wood and bracing, its density, thickness, tension, and sound influence to influence the acoustic properties. It does not refer to a tuning of the guitar body to a single default frequency. Instead, it is a comprehensive way of shaping the wood and its response and resonance properties to improve the guitar's sound. The tuning of the wood is also called voicing the instrument, a technique used to trace to previous centuries, especially in violin making. So some guitar makers believe that the actual voicing of the wood and working with the shaping of the wood during the and even after construction is more important than the outer construction itself, such as chosen bracing. Now, sound characteristics, you know, we cover a few topics here: spectrum, temporal change of spectrum, and that goes into some detail there. Now, I'll be honest, I thought that list was going to go on, so the intonation in my voice was suggesting more, but fuck it, there's only two. Let's dive in, shall we? One of the more important aspects that good luthiers need to understand is that a single tone consists of the fundamental and simultaneous overtones. Now, historically, the scientific analysis of this discovery can be associated with the ratio of the intensity of the fundamental and the various overtones defines the colour. Frequency spectrum. Right. Makes sense, right? The frequency spectrum of the tone. Overtones are simply frequencies that are a multiple of base fundamental frequencies. Fuck me, this is really just buzzing me out right now, reading this. I mean, when singing a note, there are numerous overtones present. Singers experienced in overtone singing are able to control their voice in such a way that they can increase the intensity of any high overtone to such an extent that it becomes clearly audible, whilst simultaneously singing the fundamental. In this way, two pitches, fundamental and high intensity overtone, can be made clearly audible while singing. Well, I'll be damned. Definitely can't do that shit, I can tell you now. Tonal colour is an important characteristic on a guitar. Usually the notes of the guitar's different registers, low bass, mid-range, high, etc., have different colour spectrums, differing relative intensities of fundamentals to different overtones. I'm going to take another swig. Fuck it. Nice little painting of some dude here as well. Engraving by Pierre Woe something or other. And it's a picture of Gasparo Dufro Pruga, I believe. 1532 to 1599. Lovely jubbly. But this guy died in 1570, I think. You want to see the size of his beard? Fuck me. Metal as shit. Right, let's move on to temporal change of spectrum. Now, it's important in characterising the sound of instruments, or more precisely, notes of particular registers, is how the player initiates the sound, so basically whether you're shit or not. This is the attack or onset, a short duration, transient. This occurs at the moment when a string is plucked. Right, we're going into too much detail here. We know what's going on here. We know whether someone's plicking it with their thumbnail, whether they're using the plectrum, whether they're using their thumb fingers, whether they're plucking, whether they're strumming, the setting that they're in, the acoustics of the area where they're playing the music. You know, that all comes into it as well. It's all about the vibration of the string. And of course, that's why you've got a fretboard, because when you're holding different parts of the fretboard, whether you've got like that bar thing that sits across it, changes everything. And that's what that's covering there. I just can't be fucked to read it, let's be honest. Now, we've got the styles of sound aesthetic. Now, as was mentioned, it is possible to group historic instruments according to the colour and response sound characteristic. A Baroque guitar has a different sound aesthetic than a 19th century guitar. A differing colour spectrum in the various registers, low, mid, high, and a different duration of attack, response of the instrument. The sound aesthetic is determined by the sound characteristic of notes in specific registers. An instrument's low notes has different relative timbre than its high notes. There is a historical parallel between musical styles, Baroque, Classic, Romantic, Spanish Nationalist, Flamenco, Jazz, and the style of sound aesthetic of the musical instruments used. You see, Robert de Vissey played on a Baroque guitar with a very different sound aesthetic than the guitars used by Marone Gigliani or Luigi Lagani. Lignani? I believe that's how you say it. They used 19th century guitars. And I think if we're just going to digress here, there's very kind of classic sounds when you're thinking of Maracachi. You know the Mexican bands that get together and they play? There's a very authentic, very kind of... It's a sound you can put your finger on. Or when you get someone like Jason Mraz in the beach playing by a fucking bonfire, talking about lost love and all that shite, with like numerous beads and a fucking billabong vest. You know, that has a different sound. I think that's what that's on about, basically. So, let's have a look here. Goes into the Qatar? Am I really that drunk that me trying to say the name of an instrument has turned into me saying the name of a place? Good fucking grief. Anyway, guitar making in the 19th century. To get a picture, some of the ideas on guitar building from the 19th century, some newspaper reports of guitar-related patterns. and other newspaper writings are listed. So we've got a list here. Ars Berger, Johann Georg Stauffer and Johann Erf, Bernhard and Sergensberger, Franz Bestny, Wenzel Snukup. It really is just a list of names that you can't say on a drunk wiki. There's only a few more. Lacotte Curilli, J.F. Solomon, that one's easy, Ventura, like a glove. There are also 19th century mentionings of Lacotte winning a prize for the quality of instrument. The second prize went to La Prévotte in a competition organised by Makarov. It was the guitar of Scherzer that took first place. Holy Scherzer. Guitars in the 19th century were initially all ladder braced, and their tonal energy spread over a lot of overtones. It's a desirable characteristic in instruments of the early classical or romantic era, as opposed to the more fundamentally rich guitars of Torres. Francesco Sanguino was one of the first to experiment with fan bracing. Then came Page and Panoramo, but Torres did not use it. So Panoramo and Page still had more tonal energy spread over overtones compared to Torres guitars. Blah, blah, blah. Basically, more fundamental, desirable Spanish music. And it moves on to a section here about frets, which is very, very in-depth. Movable frets. To solve all guitar intonation problems or help guitarists use different musical temperaments, it is necessary for the frets on the guitar to be adjustable. Work in this field began in the 19th century, when Thomas Perrone Thompson wrote a work on the enharmonic guitar with ideas used by Panoramo Lacotte. Panoramo, sorry, the sentence ends there. Lacotte also built a guitar and a harmonic with movable frets. Let's have another swig. The luthier Walter J. Vogt developed a contemporary mechanism with movable frets, now also used by other luthiers. Tolganen Goglu also designed an adjustable microtonal guitar in 2008 based on Vogt's design. Other concepts for changeable frets include removable detachable fingerboards or switchboards, which is what I was referring to earlier. I do apologise. Now we move into contemporary classical guitar making. See, the basis of most modern classical guitar designs was developed by Spanish luthier Antonio Torres Jurado in the mid-19th century. You see, earlier guitars were often smaller bodied, though there are exceptions. Torres created a Spanish design with light materials supported by fan bracing. Torres's fan bracing was influential for modern classical guitars. It consists of wooden strips glued inside the body to provide support and particularly deep resonance that is saturated in fundamental. Whoops. You see, Torres used a string scale of 650mm, which is usually the standard length for today's modern classical guitars. The designs Torres developed were later adapted by several very influential luthiers, Manuel Ramirez and his brother José Ramirez, Hermann Hauser Sr., and Ignacio Fletcher. Today, luthiers use the ideas and designs of Torres, Hauser, and Fletcher in their own guitars. Some luthiers experiment with their own bracing, and some also offer cutaway acoustic, electric, and composite top models. And I'm sure other luthiers are also fucking shit. For years, Brazilian rosewood was the industry standard as the best wood for the backs and sides of guitars. Unfortunately, the export of Brazilian rosewood has been restricted due to the endangerment of the species. Much of the Brazilian rosewood used for guitars is of poor quality, and the inflated price of the wood has caused many luthiers to search for alternative tone woods. there are many other good very dry woods for guitar construction. In fact, of the surviving Torres instruments, the most common back and side wood used was maple. Many guitars made today use East Indian rosewood because it is close substitute to Brazilian rosewood. It's readily available in high quality and has desirable characteristics as tone wood. There are many other woods with the characteristics to make excellent guitars and excellent alternatives, such as cocobolo, maple, pabinga, also known as African rosewood, African blackwood, camatillo rosewood, Spanish cypress, which is used exclusively for flamenco guitars, granadillo, ebony, satinwood, zincot, among others, and they're all excellent choices for your back and sides. Now, moving away from history and looking at contemporary innovations in guitar making. Lattice braced guitars. The Australian guitar maker, Greg Smallman, bless him, introduced guitars with an extremely thin soundboard, which is supported by bracing in the shape of a lattice. You see, Smallman combines this with heavier laminated back and sides with a frame. Smallman is well known for building the guitars played by John Williams. A large number of luthiers worldwide have incorporated bloody fucking blah blah blah. You know, there is a certain attention span to these drum wikis. It goes over double top, sandwich top and composite top. All that does is make me want a Subway, meatball marinara. Criticism of lattice bracing and double tops. Side sound port, fingerboard, elevated fingerboard, curved fingerboard, high frets, multiple scale length fretboards, and armrests. Goes into a lot of detail there. And then we've got an enormous section here on the state of classical guitar making. Fuck it, let's jump in. While most classical guitar makers are Anyway, so it goes on to discuss classical guitar making. Got some nice pictures here. Some nice fancy sketches, actually. We've got a sketch of a lute maker here, and we've got another sketch of other plucked instruments from some other guy's name that I can't fucking pronounce from some century that I didn't live in. And there's a few quotes dotted here and there, and there's a nice little fucking bullet pointed section. Let's have a crack. In guitar making, it is in many cases more difficult to find similarly... idealized instruments for a number of reasons. There are multiple guitar traditions still currently active, each with its own ideas of tone, voicing, projection. The flamenco tradition, for example, favours a very different kind of instrument construction from that of the concept of classical guitar, and the ideal concerto instrument for concerto performance with orchestra may not be the best choice for solo or salon ensemble playing. Yeah, that means something. Okay, cool. It really does go into depth about this history. For instance, let's have a look at this here. The sound aesthetic of early romantic guitars, such as Lacotte, on the other hand, has stronger overtones, yet without being starved in fundamental, which would again be undesirable. This stronger overtone presence is due to the ladder bracing and soundboard design. So, it looks like there's trends, just like music genres, pop, jazz, that sort of thing. You know, fundamentals, we've got romantic sounding guitars, overtones, high overtones, low on overtones, depending on the shape of the wood, the sound, the style, the trend. That seems to be the gist. Same with music, same with clothes, same with film, same with fucking everything. Let's round it off though. Let's see if I can actually read the last paragraph. So, some contemporary luthiers suggest building historic instruments based not only on an outer visual details, but based on acoustic principles from master luthiers of the 17th and 18th centuries, leaning towards and learning from the great makers, Stradivari, Amati, and ruckers. Drawing a parallel to violin making culture, the luthier as a broader art, it might be interesting to deriving indications for the possible aims and ideals of sound aesthetic in guitars from other instruments, which would open up the possibility of tonal competing with luthiers from fuckity blah blah, my god, how the hell have you made guitars? Fucking boring. So, first and foremost, I will recommend, unless you're an avid fan of this kind of stuff, do not read this article. Guitars are cool. Guitar music is cool. This article is not. Half of my face has gone to sleep from reading this fucking shit. While some of it has been very interesting, actually. There's things I didn't know. You know, the different types of wood can create different sounds. I mean, you know, you can think about it. You look at guitars. You think, yeah, you know, the composite of it creates its sound. Right? But, yeah, by and large, that's bored the fuck out of me. However, I hope it hasn't bored the fuck out of you. I hope you at least taken something new away from it. If you haven't, then you've only wasted 20 or so minutes of your life. And you can always go online and type it in, have a more of a thorough read. But we've had a pretty good overview, I'd say, of guitar making. But from a more historical classical point of view, it hasn't really gone into the modern side of things. You know, electrical guitars, how those are put together, that sort of thing. Hasn't touched on ukuleles at all. I know it goes about guitars, but ukuleles are like the little brothers, right? So, I feel somewhat underselled, a bit disappointed. But tell you what, the one thing I'm not disappointed at is the size of this guy Gasparo's beard. My god, you want to see the fucking size of this thing. The original metalhead, honestly. Sheer magnificence. Anyway, before I develop a man crush on a sketch painting on Wikipedia, I'll end it there. So, again, thank you everyone for tuning in for episode 6 of Drunk Wiki, which has been about guitar making, classical guitar making. My god, the hint is in the title. How fucking dumb am I? So there we are. Hope you enjoyed, and hope you tune in next time for next week's episode. And take care. Bye-bye.